The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You are listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Ski. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings one and all, and welcome to this latest edition of the TWBC podcast. This is episode 170. Glad to have you on board. And we're here at the San Gervasio Pro-Am the day before. And this little party here for the 10th edition is about to be gatecrashed by someone who has indicated in the past that he wouldn't compete in single event competitions, least of all slalom. But he's here, and he is none other than Joel Poland. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good, Tony. It's good to be back.
No worries. Have you kind of eased off a little bit from that from that vow a little bit when I interviewed you several episodes ago?
Yeah, so that was more of the start of last year, especially being a Worlds year and everything. I was kind of more so focused on three event more than the single events at the time. And then obviously the Worlds happened. This year I figured, you know what, let's give it a go in these single events. Let's start trying to chase everyone down a little bit and see if we can juggle them around a little bit.
Okay, you're known primarily as an overall skier, so give me an idea, give me some kind of indication as to how you've gotten to this point. You know, let's just start right from the beginning, I guess. And for those of you few people out there who don't know Joel Poland.
Well, first of all, I hate being called an overall skier because I think of myself as a three eventer. Like, I'm a slalomer, I'm a tricker, and a jumper.
What's the difference?
There's a huge difference. Like, when you're overall, you're trying to combine them, whereas I've always seen myself as I'm a professional slalomer, I'm a professional tricker, I'm a professional jumper.
Okay, you're trying to compartmentalize,
yeah,
aren't you?
Yeah, and I think that's always kind of been the thing I've aimed for since, like, a young age. Like, I remember teachers telling me that you wouldn't really, like, how many people in water skiing make a good living? And I remember kind of looking at it and seeing the prize money and going, well, there's not a lot if you're a single eventer, but if you're winning every event, you can probably make a pretty good living, right?
Yeah, indeed, yeah. Absolutely, you just have to wet three times more than everybody else.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, I get to ski three times in a day, so I got a lot of energy. It's a good thing, I'd say.
I noticed you didn't bring your jump skis here to San Gervasio.
No, so I'm taking a little break from the jump. Like I say, I'm trying to juggle the single events, so right now I'm focusing on slalom primarily, and then a little bit of trick, and then next week we'll put the jumpers back on. I have an overall tournament in 3 or 4 weeks, so we'll start gearing up for jump again and get the balance right.
All right, then. That sounds pretty good. So kind of summarize your season so far in each of the compartmentalized events that we've now established that you compete in. Starting off with the jump event, you know, I mean you've had a pretty good showing at the Masters, I would say.
Yeah, jump's been really good this year. Like, a few things just kind of started making more sense, and I don't feel like I'm trying to kill myself to go far anymore, which is really nice. There was a little while where I just seemed to be pushing myself right to the edge, and sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. But yeah, jump's been good. Like, just
sometimes
took a different approach to it this year. Did a little less jumping, actually, and it seemed to kind of work out. And yep, Taking it a little more, I guess, seriously would be the right word. Like, still having fun and enjoying it, but you know, maybe one or two jump sets a week, and every set is important, versus doing a jump set every day, and it doesn't matter if you don't jump good today because you can jump good tomorrow, you know.
Mm-hmm. You know, so I mean, it definitely sounds like that you've kind of toned things down a little bit so far as your jumping is concerned, and it has produced more consistent results.
Big time.
You know, so I mean, you won the Masters. I mean, what was that like when in the jumper went, which I think is the second time you've won it there on Callaway Gardens?
Yeah, it was the first time was really sweet, especially because it was kind of unexpected, and this time I really set a goal to win that one. So it was a different feeling winning. It was like the first time when I won, obviously I wanted to win, but I didn't really have too much expectation. It was more I just kind of wanted to go jump well, and then this year, you know, I knew I wanted to jump well, but I really had my eyes set on winning, and second and third wasn't really going to cut it. So, yeah, it was a very sweet feeling kind of walking away from that win and putting in months of work for it to pay off. Like, it's a good feeling when that happens.
Indeed, indeed. And that good feeling continued on into Night Jam, right?
Yeah, it did indeed. That was a good event. Actually, after Masters, I was struggling a little bit with just, like, trying to go to that like, danger zone where you go, like, the big jumps.
You push the edge or the edge pushes you.
Yeah, like, it was just hard to kind of get into that range and stay comfortable. And knowing I was going to have to do it in night, like, I was more stressed out for Night Jam than I was Masters. Like, Masters, I felt very comfortable. And Night Jam, I felt pretty stressed out coming into it. But, you know.
Would that have anything to do with the boat that was pulling you?
No, I think it's just, when you're trying to go into that range all the time, it plays like a toll on your mind of it's dangerous and you can block it out a lot, but eventually, like, you start realizing how dangerous it is. And I think I watched the video back from winning Masters, and my winning jump was pretty sketchy. Like, I'm kind of lucky I didn't go upside down, and I watched that video back maybe one too many times and realized, like, wow, you really,
yeah, coming off the second week, you were starting to break and you just hit the ramp just at the right time.
Yeah, and just, yeah, it was in the air, I was flying around like crazy, and yeah, I like fully put myself on the line for that jump. And then afterwards you kind of realize how dangerous that is, and
yeah,
just, yeah, it played a little bit of a mental toll on me, but yeah, I managed to kind of get my mentality back together, and yeah, first 2:30 in the dark as well, which is very rewarding.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's only about 10 feet shy of the course record there at 240 feet from the likes of Freddy Krueger, who you've have you skied a little bit with him? No, since joining Mastercraft.
Yeah, I was skiing with him for a little while. I kind of had my eyes set on Mastercraft for quite a long time, so I'd kind of slipped into his sort of messages and tried to ski with him a little bit, and he's always been like as good as you could like hope for. Like, any question I have, he'll answer it, and there's not many people in the world that I think would be like that, that would give you the answers when you're chasing them down and trying to beat them, you know. And even still, like, the week before King LA Night Jam, I went and skied with him, and, you know, in practice he's still trying to help me, even though the week before we just skied at Masters and he had a terrible tournament, I had a great tournament. Like, no resentment from his side, was like just totally a pure human being and like there to help and help the sport. And yeah, something that I quite kind of idolize, that kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, I've known Freddie for years, you know, and the one thing that I can tell you about him is he's definitely very, very welcoming and very open in regards to providing answers and stuff like that, especially if it's really bogging you down, you know. So I mean, fair play to him. And you know, and you signed with Mastercraft what was it, last year?
Yeah, last October.
So the first full anniversary of being on that Mastercraft team is coming up, but coming up pretty soon. So I mean, how has that been? I mean, aside from competing in the events that you typically go to and winning some of them, you know, what else do you do by way of you know, work for Mastercraft, boat shows, that kind of stuff?
So far, you know, they've not asked a whole lot from my end. They kind of just like letting me do my own thing for a little bit and chase the water skiing, chase the pro tournaments and everything. I'm sure my role will evolve in the future, especially, you know, seeing where Freddie's career goes. And
yeah, once you get your Instagram numbers up a little bit,
like,
you know.
I'd say I'm still in the learning stage. Like, I'm still trying to learn everything I can about, you know, Mastercraft as a company and boat designs and everything, from, you know, from getting to know the dealers and boat shows and understanding the boat from inside to out. So I'm still in my learning stage. I am nowhere near ready to move on to that next bit where I'm going to be designing a boat, but I'm sure at some point we'll get around to it, and I'll do my absolute best to help out.
So between you and me, is there anything going on in the Skunk Works in Tennessee?
When we turn the mics off, maybe I can tell you a little more.
Okay, that's exactly the answer that I wanted. All right, then. So let's move on a little bit from jump to tricks. Now, tricks, Yeah, I see that little scowl on your face a little bit, because you it's probably the event where you have to compete more to be on top, because you mean you got Matty, who is essentially your training partner during the winter. You've got Tincho, you've got Pato, you've got Jake. All of these trickers are on the cusp of 13,000 points, and you're thrown into the mix as well. So,
you know,
who's going to do it? Who's going to step up, man?
Man, I got to back my boy Matty, haven't I? He's my little guy right there. I've been skiing with him for a couple years. Like, first time I went to go ski with him, he was already an insane tricker, but I didn't really know him that well. Hadn't really seen him ski a whole lot, and yeah, I get in the boat and I watch him ski, and the kid doesn't get wet. Like, he did not fall for the first week that I watched him ski. Like, it was, like, never... And it's not like he was just doing easy stuff. The kid's tricking, like, 11, 12,000 points without getting wet. Like,
Teflon Matty.
Yeah, so, yeah, I gotta back Matty, like, Speedy Gonzalez. I think, especially with the way tricks set up, it's all about speed right now. So, whoever's the fastest is going to trick the most points. And Matty's quick, man. Like, he's really quick. I think he's... It's going to be really tight between these young guys, but yeah, I got to back my boy Matty.
It sounds like you've all but conceded the fact that one of the younger trickers, those the younger than you, are going to hit 13 first.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm going to be the first to be hitting 13. Ideally, at some point, I'll break 13. That would be the goal. But just with the way I trick, and honestly, with the way the points are set up, like, my style doesn't work. I'm not a speed tricker. I'm a big tricks tricker.
Big tricker.
And yeah, the big tricks are only worth like an extra 50 points right now. So I get a little bit screwed on that side. But you know, it's part of the game, and I'm not going to complain about it. I'm going to keep doing my thing.
Okay, let me present a scenario to you. Okay, yep. I mean, if by the end of this season, 13,000 points has not been eclipsed, are you prepared to go back out there and learn some new stuff, or try and get a little bit more, a little bit speedier to try and get to that gap first?
Yeah, so I go back and forth on this. Like, the way I catch up to these boys is I start playing the game their way. So I got to start taking out some of my big tricks, like the Super 5, and I got to start doing the smaller flip runs.
Uh-huh.
And then going for that, like, extra ski line back or a wake 7 front to front or something like that at the end of the run.
Quantity
like, it's definitely an option, but yeah, I don't know if that's quite the way I want to go. I haven't quite given up on changing the points just yet.
All right, then. So we'll go on from tricks. Now, last year we discovered that you're a slalom skier.
Yep.
Who knew that a free event skier would actually excel slaloming enough to be like the number one seeded skier going into the men's slalom final of last year's World Championships, and becoming the first radar skier to do it too.
Mm-hmm.
The first radar skier to get into 9.75 meters. I don't know whether we've discussed this too much in a previous podcast episode, you know, but I mean, half the reason why you're here in San Gervasio, and you probably wouldn't have even remotely ventured to be in a slalom event if you hadn't discovered, well, I guess discovered, that you can actually hang with these boys.
No, I think regardless of how Worlds went, I still, despite what it may seem, I do have a plan of where I'm trying to go in my career and what I'm trying to do. And
do you have a cunning plan?
It's got a few stages to it. So right now I'm in the slalom stage. And later on in the season, we'll come back around to a jump stage, and at some point there'll be a little overall stage again. But yeah, like, the first time I ever won anything was a slalom event at the Europeans. So I've always kind of been a slalomer at heart. My coach called me a tricker. Matt said I was the most talented guy in jump skis who had no idea what he'd ever seen, who had no idea what he was actually trying to do. So yeah, like, I'm a bit of a mixed match, but yeah, I've always wanted to chase down the slalomers, and you know, I do think slalom and jump, you can kind of keep those going at a longer age.
Mm-hmm.
Trick, you don't see too many people going past their 30s, definitely 40s. You don't see it happen. I think
unless your name's Russell Gay.
Russell Gay, and I think Corey Pikos.
For a little bit, yeah.
He was still tricking like 11K at 45, so it's still possible. But yeah, I think slalom might be my future. I don't know if I want to keep hitting a jump for my whole entire life like Freddy Krueger. That guy's insane. So yeah, at some point we'll maybe transition more to slalom.
Yeah, and I mean, slalom does take it out of you. I mean, I spoke a little bit with Will Asher a little bit, and he, you know, realizes, you know, for the sake of his longevity, that he's gonna have to kind of back off a little bit, you know, and take things a little easy, you know, and make sure that his fitness is maintained, and you know, on the strength of his wins that he's had so far on the Water Ski Pro Tour and the men's slalom. You'd have to say that strategy is working.
Yeah, big time. I mean, he's skiing really well. And there's a huge thing in skiing of, like, less is more, you know? Once you know what you're trying to do, it's more about executing it well than trying to do a million reps. Like, I don't need more reps at this point. I'm sure Will doesn't need any more reps. He needs to just execute what he knows how
he's
to do well.
He's only practiced slalom three times since Morocco, and including Morocco.
Yeah, so he knows what he's doing. Like, it's about executing it well on the day, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, you can practice and be a world champion in practice, but if you don't perform it on the day, well...
And there's a big thing to that of, you know, let's say you do... If you're doing seven sets a week, you kind of give yourself permission to ski bad. You give yourself permission to mess up a set, whereas if you're only going to do one set, you better make it worth it. You better know what you're trying to do that set and perform it well. And
does that kind of put pressure on you?
What you're trying to do? Oh, totally. Yeah. And that's a good thing, right?
Like, it is.
Putting that pressure on yourself in practice that, all right, I've got one set this week to figure out what I'm trying to do and execute it well, and I better get it right, because at some point you're going to fly halfway around the world and you're only going to get one practice set, and then you're going to be skiing in the worlds, and it's probably not going to be the best site either. So... it's like preparation for that kind of thing.
All right. So far as your equipment is concerned, I mean, obviously you ski behind Mastercraft, but you also ski on Radar, and you've been repping Radar for as long as I've pretty much known you. You're their number one slalomer now. So do you kind of get priority a little bit as to what the latest Vapor Shape is going to look like?
You know, I stay in my lane. I'm the skier. I ski. I let the Matt and Rossi and Brooks, they decide those kind of things, and I just give feedback. So yeah, I wouldn't say there's much of a pecking order of who's wearing what. Like,
yeah,
I stay in my lane, I stick to my job, I don't tell them how to do what they're trying to do, and they give me advice on what I'm trying to do because they actually know what they're talking about. But I don't know much about ski design, so I just stay in my lane.
But for a skier who's smelt the rare air of 9.75 meters, you've got to offer something into the design. I mean guys like Chris Rossi and Matt Reaney and the like would be stupid not to if you could offer something of substance.
Yeah, for sure. Like, we definitely bounce ideas off each other, and yeah, I'm always trying to learn. So I always view it like, if they're sharing information of what they think they should do on a ski, like, I'm a listener. I'm going to listen to what they say and just try to take it on board. Because again, I'm still in my learning stage. Like, I don't know anything really. Like, I'm still trying to learn as much as I can before I form my own ideas. And, you know, there's a big thing of sort of trusting the people around you to make those decisions, and you can just give that honest feedback. I find that's the best way versus, you know, me trying to give my ideas. Like, we all speak a different language, don't we?
Yeah.
So I just give my feedback on what I feel and how it feels to me. I'm not going to tell them the shape of the ski needs to do this and that, because I don't know what the shape of the ski should look like. But I know when I stand on this part of the ski, this is what it feels like.
Yeah, I mean, the Radar skis tend to have a higher tip rocker compared to a lot of other skis, you know. I mean, interpret from that what you will as to what you want it to do, I guess.
Yeah, again, I have no idea about any of that stuff. I just know that when I stand here on the ski, this is what it does. When I do this on the ski, it feels like this, and I just pass back that information.
Pull out to the left and make some turns exactly. Right and left and exactly. Repeat that a couple more times.
Try not to overthink it.
Yeah, exactly. So, beyond San Gervasio, we've got Oxford, haven't we?
We do indeed. Home tournament.
Yes, indeed. fancy skiing in the dark?
Oh, I love that. Last time I skied in the dark, I won, so...
Okay.
Yeah, all no, right. I'm a big fan of, you know, mixing it up. Like, last weekend with a head-to-head, you know, I was giving everyone a little bit of stick on the dock and trying to wind some people up, getting their heads. I'll be doing the exact same thing this weekend in the dark. Again, it's going to be mixing it up. And yeah, I'm all about that, making a bit of a challenge on top of a challenge.
Now, you obviously referred to Monaco about a week or so ago. You were involved in that tournament, right?
No, I had a bachelor party. I was in Canada.
Oh, okay. Then obviously you were miles and miles away from Rockbroom when you heard that Freddie Winter had sustained pretty much a season-ending hit injury. Your thoughts on that from someone who's considered himself the second most popular British skier after you?
Yeah, man. You hate to see that stuff. Like, it's so unfortunate as well. Like, he had, honestly, like, the crash was a good crash. Like, he shouldn't have been injured. Just, you know, what's the chances? There's a dock right there and he hits it. Like, he got so unlucky there. So unlucky. And I know, like, knowing Freddie, like, it's going to be killing him right now, sitting in a hospital bed and having to watch everyone go out and ski. But also knowing Freddie, he's passionate about the sport and he'll be watching every event. He'll be cheering for some and rooting against others. And, you know, I hope we manage to see him towards the end of the season.
He'll probably be swearing at me. He'll probably be swearing at me from the hospital bed, dosed up on enough morphine to choke a horse, you know. But I mean, yeah, I mean that's going to be a bummer. But
it's terrible to see. But look, the guy's going to keep himself busy, and I know he's going to use this. It's going to be some crazy motivation for next season, and everyone get ready for next year because he's going to be coming like a bull in a china shop.
Yeah, it's gonna be like Rush, isn't it? I mean, have you ever seen that movie with the story of Niki Lauda and James Hunt? You know, where Niki Lauda was in the hospital bed, and you know, and 6 months later he went on to place in the Italian Grand Prix and finished 1 point short of the championship.
It's literally going to be that. While we're all skiing all the way to the end of the season and burning ourselves out, he's going to be getting ready, preparing himself, and I'm terrified.
And if you're looking for a good sports movie, Rush, I'd certainly recommend it, starring Chris Hemsworth. But anyway, we'll wrap up this podcast, and certainly wish Joel Poland the very best of luck. And in closing, do you have any thanks or any acknowledgements you like to say, or anything else you want to say for that matter?
I would like to thank my friend Eduardo Morenzi. He's been looking after me while in Italy and showing me around. And yeah, it's a beautiful country, so very happy to be here.
Has he pointed you out to some of the fashion stores?
He has indeed. We dropped by his family store, Herno. Went by the factory as well and kind of got to see how behind the curtain of the fashion industry, which is a very unique experience. And yeah, it's been a really nice trip to Italy so far. And yeah, happy to be here in San Gervasio as well. Thank you, Matteo, for having us.
Indeed, indeed. And that brings to a conclusion episode 170 of the TWBC podcast. And until next time, this is Tony Lightfoot saying ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.